Welcome to Her Story on a Plate, a place for real talk about real bodies.
Let's dish about our complex relationships to food and bodies.
We are two experts in the field coming at this from an anti-diet, your body holds wisdom approach.
This podcast is all about changing the conversation we have in our heads and culture so that we can embrace ourselves fully. So we're talking about compare and despair today. And the reason we're talking about it is because after Jenny and I dropped the first six episodes of Her Story on a Plate podcast, we were getting wonderful feedback. It felt great. And people said lovely things about all of us. And the first thing we got back together, Jenny and I, to have a chat. And I said, oh my gosh, Jenny, I have to come clean. Everything people said, every time they said something really great about you, I was like, yeah, she's better. She's so smart. She's so articulate. I just went so deep into compare and despair. And then the funnier part was that then Jenny said, oh my gosh, me too. I started to compare too.
I actually went into full out imposter syndrome. Full out.
full out imposter syndrome. Well, there we go. Right. So then we were like, okay, let's do an episode about how we compare and then end up in despair.
I think it's cross-cultural. I think it's intergenerational. I think it's cross-gender. I really do think that most people, whether they even realize they're doing it or not, are constantly comparing themselves to others, right? The most obvious comparison usually has to do with body size. And it's important to say out loud that that's based on whatever ideas we have in our head about what being in a particular body size means. So what does our culture tell us? Well, if you are thin, you are disciplined. If you are disciplined, you will do better in life. You will, you know, you're just smarter, right?
And you'll get the love and you'll get the success and you'll get all the good things, right? And that shows up. I really see it show up for women around social currency. Women talk to me all the time about walking into a room, looking around the room, and figuring out, am I bigger than her? Am I smaller than her? Who's the smallest? And that calculation is social currency. Who's got the most power? Who's the most successful?
This is also about, oh my God, it touches on so many things. Let's just try to unwrap them all. One is about age. You know, I think age is built into this, right? Youth is better. Youth is smarter, not necessarily, but youth means more possibility. And that's what most think. They don't understand, of course, until they're in it, that youth also brings knowledge and some peace, we hope. But the age thing comes into play with body size because people compare, especially if you're in the public light, what people used to look like. I mean, I'm seeing all over social media now interviews that are done now with all of the members of Friends, and they are comparing them to what they looked like in the episodes, which were 20
when they were
25 years ago, right? And I'm thinking to myself, oh my God, how must they feel to constantly be compared?
Right.
I would only hope they think like, well, okay, so for one, we're smarter than we were. We know more than we knew. We're more successful than we were. But that's not what people are seeing. What they're seeing is, oh, look at them. They're aging.
What happened to her? That's the headline. Right. Look what happened to her, right? Oh my gosh, you had the audacity to age, to change, right? And it's so important to highlight that that concept of comparison. We're not just comparing ourselves to other people. We're comparing ourselves to who we used to be, right? Every time someone says, I want to get into my skinny jeans from years ago, that's comparison. That's body comparison.
And the ultimate irony, I want to look like I looked 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago. However, when I was in that body 10 years ago and 20 years ago and 30 years ago, I thought I looked cool. I thought I was fat.
Right.
I'd give anything to be in the body mm-hmm. I was in then. So imagine if you could just appreciate the body you're in while you're acting.
Now, right now, this is it. No, my mom, who's 92, says she looks at pictures of when she was young and goes, what was I thinking? What was I thinking that my body was not okay? I was lovely.
You know, you just reminded me there's an exercise that we sometimes do in some of the groups that I facilitate, where folks bring in photos of themselves from childhood to wherever they are on their timeline now. So depending on how old they are, they'll bring in pictures, let's say every 5 years, right? And they're looking at mm-hmm. this timeline of photos. You can imagine how much it brings up. But one of the things it inevitably brings up is, how is it that my mother put me on a diet when I was 7? Look how cute I was.
Yes.
Look how cute I was.
Yeah.
Why do I think I was fat and disgusting when I was 13? I was cute as a button. So imagine if you could see yourself through your future eyes now.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. That's so powerful. I do a similar, but a little bit different exercise where I ask women, so from 0 to 5, how did your body change? From 5 to 10, how did your body change? 10 to 15, all the way up. And then what did you notice? Oh, my body was always changing. Well, there it is. Our body is all, right? That is the condition of life. That is evolution. That is what happens to us, right? So if we can be in that place of embracing change, right? We can be in a less comparison relationship with ourselves. So now if we're...
You've used an expression often, which is the being in the prison of body obsession. I think it's such a powerful phrase because it is prison. Until you find the key and you open the jail door. It really is. I mean, imagine that you wake up in the morning and instead of looking in the mirror and saying, oh God, imagine if you could look in the mirror and say, I made it through another night. Good morning. Welcome.
Good morning.
No, another day.
Right. And Jenny, I want to say it's possible. It's possible, right? And I love how you invite, like, imagine this is what we want, but it is possible. We start to believe it's not possible because we're living and breathing this soup of diet culture, of improvement mentality, right? We're always trying to improve something. So no, like this body. So let's talk though for a moment about when we walk into a room, right? As a woman. And there's the comparison. Oh, she's cuter. She's got a better bag. She's got better shoes. She's got better hair. Like whatever the heck the thing is. Let's talk about how we actually work with that compare and despair within ourselves.
Well, I think there's a few places that we learn that, isn't there? Right? You can learn that certainly if you go to middle school or what we used to call junior high school, you certainly learned it there, right? Our bodies were changing.
Yeah.
We were very hormonal. We were going in and out of friend groups all the time. You can imagine the insecurity. Now, imagine being that age today where there's bullying that's just 24/7 all over social media. It's a whole other story. But we learn it in some of our social settings. We can also learn it in our homes, whether we mean to or not. We can learn it in our homes. Here's what I see often. There's a heterosexual couple that produces 2 or 3 children. And inevitably, one child looks exactly like one parent, and another child looks exactly like the other parent. And the third child kind of has a combination of both. And one parent might be in a larger body and one parent might be in a naturally smaller body. And the child that is in the smaller body says, well, okay, whew, glad I got those genes. The other child says, I'm screwed. Look at that. I got those genes. Mm-hmm. Like their whole life script is written right there. And it's blame.
Oh my gosh. Totally. There's so many clients that I've talked to who said, I was at the dinner table with my family and I was given less. because I was the one in the big body. Less to eat. I was given less to eat because I was in the larger body. And my sister, my brother, they could eat whatever they wanted. But if I reached for that sweet, do you really want to do that? And there's one of the many places we learn comparison, right? I learned comparison in gym classes. It was all ranked. How high could you jump? How far could you swim? How high on the rope could you climb? It was all comparison based. So are grades. Right?
You realize there are people listening now who could be saying or thinking, well, but you know what? That's just part of life. Because after all, if you want to be successful in life, you have to strive for excellence. And you better know that someone else is always going to want to be in the spot you're in. And it's really just a matter of being aware so that you know what your competition is.
Okay. Then what I would say to that is, yes, we do have a world that compares. And we can be in a place where someone has a strength in, I don't know, climbing a rope in a gymnasium, but that doesn't need to devalue the worth of everybody else in the room. There's a way to support people's strengths, support people in growing stronger or having more intellectual curiosity or getting more into science, without making everybody else who doesn't have that inclination feel bad about themselves, like they are less worthy.
I think one of the things I want to say out loud too is that if you are someone who has children and your children are anywhere between 5 and 15, you want to really do two things. One, to limit the amount of social media that they get exposed to, because they don't even realize how much of the compare and despair culture is in every frame that they see. And the other thing is to just remind them all the time how wonderful they are, how much you love them, and just really give them very big hugs, because that's what the body remembers. The body not only remembers the bullying, the body not only remembers the comparison, but it remembers warm affection, warm hugs. I can't say that enough times.
Absolutely. I remember in grad school studying about adolescence when there'd be two kids in the same home and one would not do well. They were both in high-risk homes. And one would really struggle in life and one would really thrive. Mm. And what was the difference? There was one person that believed in them, one person that said, you are valuable, you are worthy. Just you being you is a powerful thing in the world. And that support imbues a sense of resilience.
Remember
in
that
us.
Words have meaning. They really do. And the body remembers the words that you hear. I think very well-intentioned, loving parents say things all the time because they were said to them. And they say things like, as you mentioned before, you sure you want more? You sure you're still hungry? Or they'll say things like, I would change that. I wouldn't wear that outside. Now, it might make perfect sense in the moment. What the child remembers is, uh-oh, I better be more careful because I may not look right. And that becomes an obsession forever.
Yeah. There was a memory that popped up, Jenny, when you were talking about like words matter. So I often throw my mom under the bus because she took me to Weight Watchers when I was like 9, which is the beginning of like a mess and a half, and pretty much why I do what I do. But when we would go shopping and I would say, well, let me get this smaller size, I will get smaller and I will fit it. She would look at me and say, no, we buy clothes that make us feel good in the body that we're in. That's how we shop. And that always stayed with me.
Good.
Always.
Good for her.
Right? Words matter. Positive words matter. Sure. Did the Weight Watchers thing really mess me up forever? Absolutely. And do I feel good in my clothes all the time? Yes. Do I choose clothes that make me feel truly at home in my body? Yes. Do I open my closet in the morning and not one item of clothing is screaming at me, telling me my body should be different? Absolutely. Well, you
know, it's funny.
Why? Because
it's funny that you talk about this, because there's another form of comparing and despairing. And that is people that have closets that look like stores by size.
Yes.
I have this clothing that's this size, and then I have this that's this size. This is the size that fits. This is the size I aspire to. This is the size I'll never be again. I cannot say loudly and clearly enough, just make sure that your closet has in it exactly what you wear now. Because when you keep the things that were when your body was some other size, you are setting yourself up for daily comparison all the time. You will never be satisfied in the moment. You'll either be looking at larger clothes and saying, okay, fear factor, got to make sure I'm never that. Looking at smaller clothes saying, well, why aren't I that size? Why? Because you're probably 30 years older. Right. That's why.
Absolutely. Do you want to open your closet and be in the compare and despair? Do you want to open your closet and have your clothes yelling at you that you're not enough? Or how about opening your closet and being like, all your clothes being like, ooh, what are we in the mood for? What's the style of today? What's the color of today? Right? Let's play. Let's be creative right now.
And this is hard.
It's a very different start.
This is hard to hear when you really hate your body, right? There is no color to pick today. It's going to be black, thank you very much, because I just want to hide my body. And I hear we get that.
I totally do.
Really do.
I had years of black clothing for that very reason. It's slimming.
Right.
That was the line.
Right. Yeah, nobody will notice.
Absolutely.
If we're black, nobody will notice, right?
Oh, it's really, really painful, right? That whole piece of how we harm ourselves. And I do want to invite people into the possibility that it doesn't have to be that way. And I also know people are listening and going, yes, but I paid good money for that clothes.
Good, then you know what?
Like that was one of my...
If you paid good money for those clothes, donate them so that other people will benefit from them. Maybe you'll even get a tax write-off if that interests you. But truly, to keep them simply because I paid for them, it's like you're beating yourself with a dollar bill every day. And I'm not putting my hand in anyone's pocket. I understand that sometimes financial situations command what they command. But I'm simply saying that when you set yourself up for a closet that has all comparative items, you will simply never know a moment of peace. You will always be in that prison of body obsession that we talk about all the time. I think that's a really important point.
Yeah. It is. The other thing is, so let's just review for a second, right? We talked about comparison with aging. We talked about comparison with other women walking into a room. We talked about comparison to our previous self. We talked about comparison in terms of size and clothing, right? And we talk also about this comparison to this unrealistic ideal of who we're supposed to be that is based in absolutely nothing except for, right, the media or this idea of who we thought we were going to be when we were younger. That's
the
comparison.
Fashion industry.
Airbrushed
photos. Things that are completely doctored to look a certain way.
And yes.
At all ages, we're looking at those things and saying, oh, I'll never be that. Or how do I get to be that when it's a created image? It's not even real. It's literally a created image.
That's so important, right? What's real? What is real and what is now?
I think money enters into this. I think people compare themselves financially also. You know, I'm not as successful as that person, or I have to make sure I'm the most successful person in the room. Listen, great. If you're motivated and you want to create something and it rewards you both financially and in otherwise, yahoo, great for you, right? But remember, there's also this relationship between money and beauty and money and body size that we tend to collapse the two, right? If I have a lot of money, then I have access to everything I need. And so I should make sure that I'm skinny and thin, because if I'm not, I'm not going to have the same credibility and I won't make the same amount of money. I mean, this is like a real problem.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. That's the thinking. That's the obsession. That's the never enoughness, right? What goes hand in hand with compare and despair is never enough. I am not enough. I'm not good enough. I'm not rich enough. I'm not thin enough. I'm not whatever enough.
I'm not youthful enough. I'm not clever enough. I'm not sexy enough. All of those things. Imagine if you could wake up in the morning and just declare, okay, this is a day of enough. I am actually enough. I am more than enough today, whether you believe it or not.
Yeah.
You know, there's this idea of affirmations, right? Affirmations are ways in which you tell your body or you tell your brain or you tell your soul something in the hopes that eventually you'll listen to yourself. They're aspirational in some ways, but, you know, an affirmation can be, I am delicious. I am kind. And just to put it out there, you tell yourself enough times, you will believe it. How do I know this? Because negations work the same way. You tell yourself enough times, I'm fat, I'm disgusting, I'm never going to do this, I'm never going to do that. Guess what? Those you believe in a second. So why not try a positive affirmation instead of the automatic negations that we hear, that we tell ourselves all the time?
What you're talking about is this idea, Rick Hansen's idea of our brain is Velcro to the bad, right? It hangs on for survival, and anything that's good just slides off like Velcro. Mm-hmm. But I want to say I have a bit of a bone to pick around affirmations, because I was a Louise Hay girl. I love my body. I love my body every day in the mirror. And literally my body laughed at me for 10 years. Like, that is not true. You don't. That's absolutely not the truth. And so affirmations, that sort of putting something on, did not work for me at all. And what worked for me much better in terms of creating new neural pathways was, this is who I am today, because that felt real. I needed something that felt actually real in the moment, so that my psyche, my whole being could go, okay, that's true. This is who you are today. This is how you're showing up. This is, and I still do it when I look in Zoom, or I look right now and we're recording. Oh, this is what I look like right now. Okay, this is me right now. That is true. I don't have to hype myself up, because I won't believe hype. I don't believe hyperbole, but I will believe authenticity. And that has actually helped me make a much more trusting, authentic relationship with my body than anything
else. That's
brilliant.
I'll say one final thing before we close, which is think about stress hormones. Think about what happens in your body every time you secretly say to yourself, or you say out loud, I'll never, I can't, I won't, I'm bad, I'm not this, I'm not that, I'm fat, I'm disgusting, whatever it is you say. Every time you have that, am I thin enough? Do I look okay? Am I ever going to look okay? Mm-hmm. Every time you say those things to yourself, you have stress hormones coursing through your body. This has an effect cardiovascularly, it has effect metabolically, and it just crushes your soul. So you want to catch yourself doing that, and simply saying whatever you would say to a young child, whatever you would say to your favorite loving unconditional pet, say whatever you would say, because I promise you, if my little doggy walked into the room, I would not say, are you being your best self today? I simply wouldn't. I just simply wouldn't. He wouldn't care anyway, but I wouldn't, you know, I would be cuddling and warm, and imagine if we could be that with ourselves every day.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. It's a beautiful way to end, which is with compassion, right? So when you notice compare, when you notice the despair, when you notice the not enoughness, oh, I see you. And my favorite thing is, put your hand on your heart and do exactly what Jenny just said. What would I say to my pet to a baby, right? Catch it. Catch the painful. Notice it. It's not like we're trying to erase it, like it doesn't exist. There is suffering. We do suffer sometimes in our relationship with our body. That is real. Notice it and be like, oh, honey, I really hear you. And
thank you, Nina, for such a lovely conversation.
Thank you, Jenny.
Oh, and you out there, we hope you enjoyed it too, because I know we did. We hope you enjoyed it too. And we will definitely see you next time. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to Her Story on a Plate.
Keep in touch with us at herstoryonaplate.com.
We'd love to hear from you.
See you next time.